a moment of tension. They're out there preparing sheep. They're not warriors. They're not prepared for a fight. They don't know what's going to happen. And they hear the words from one of the young men. Peace. Peace unto you. Peace to your prosperity. Peace to all that you have. Peace to your family. We've come in the name of David. And then they deliver the message that David gave. These are extraordinary young men. Many of you in this room are young men at the same age group that these men probably are. Early 20s. Very difficult to find a man at that age group that'll do exactly what he's told. Moreover, it's very difficult to find anybody at any age that'll do exactly what they're told. I want you to observe these men are prudent. They're warriors, but they honor the man that sent them. They delivered the message exactly as told. I want you to see what Nabal says. Now listen, David has every reason to expect a favorable reply. Number one, don't you remember? Caleb was from the tribe of Judah. Moreover, all this land that we're talking about is in the tribe of Judah. Nabal is a distant relative of David's. Everybody in the tribe of Judah is a relative of David's. Everybody in all the tribes are kin, you know, through Abraham. But you'll remember that Abraham had a son named Isaac, and Isaac had a son named Jacob. And Jacob had 12 sons, and one of them was Judah. And Caleb was from that tribe. So moreover, I want you to understand that David is making a request of a man that's related to him in his own tribe. We don't know how close kin, but kin. David himself was born at Bethlehem, just a short distance away to the north. David made a gentle request. It was a reasonable request because, as you'll recall in verse 16, that the workers, the shepherds that worked for Nabal, went further than David. Now, I'm going to tell you something. I want you to hear this. David reveals to you and me wisdom in what he's done here. Because David did not overstate his kindness that he had extended to Nabal through the shepherds. All David said to him was that the whole time they were out in the wilderness and we were camped around them, we took nothing that you had and you lost nothing. But you see, then David said, ask your young shepherds. Ask them, check with them, verify. That was wise because David left off that he was better to them than that. It wasn't just that he didn't take anything from them. Because in verse 16, one of these shepherds says, actually, they were a wall around us, a fortress, by day and by night, so that all kinds of marauding bands of Moabites and Ammonites and Philistines that might have come in there, come in. And David has 600 warriors at his disposal, we learn as we read this chapter and in the preceding chapters, that have come in and joined themselves to him. Mighty warriors. And you know, a marauding band sees 600 warriors guarding some sheep. You know, it's, you know, just how much do you want those sheep? So that, see, David, by not overstating what his service was he had rendered, actually left room for the shepherds to add to it and make it even stronger. I'm teaching you how to make a petition. Learn from David. Well, you say, didn't do David much good. Yeah, but, you know, you can do it just right, and sometimes it's going to fall on the ears of a fool. Now, So I want you to see that David expected a good report. Now, you see here in verse 8, in the middle of verse 8, David says, through these young men, for we come in a good day. Let me tell you what he's saying. See, in other words, as we continue with the story, you'll recall that right after the shearing is over, there's a big party, a big feast. See, David knew the custom. You remember in the book of Ruth, this Boaz, when he had finished bringing in his barley crop, there was a big party, a big celebration down at the threshing floor, and Naomi knew there would be one. And she gave Ruth the instructions, recall. So what David is saying is this: God has tremendously blessed you with this tremendous flock, and what a day this is, and come, let us rejoice with you. It's a good day. It's a feast day. We want to rejoice with you. Now, whatever you would like to give us. Now, I want you to understand that David did have a claim on Nabal. There's a claim here. He has rendered a service to a relative, to a kinsman. He's protected him. He's been good to him. And now comes the incredible answer. Verse 10. And Nabal answered David's servants and said, "Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays who break away every man from his master." He said, "David's not much better than an outlaw." Who is David? Now, I want to talk to you about that. Nabal is not asking the question, "Who is David?" as though he does not know who David is. It's an insult. He's not asking the question, "I don't know David." You see, David's 28 years old now. Back in chapter 17, David met Goliath. That battle was fought only about 25 miles away from here. This is a small, dinky country. And the Philistines had them totally under dominion. And Nabal was alive. Moreover, Nabal is probably older than David. David has slain in single combat the greatest warrior the world had ever seen until that day. David shouldn't have had to. When Goliath for 40 days issued the challenge across the valley, the man that should have taken the challenge was the biggest, strongest, best-looking, most powerful warrior that Israel had ever seen until that day. Saul, the king. But Saul was in sin, and he knew that God would not be with him, and he feared that he would be slain. And well, he should. There were other men that were there that day, great and powerful warriors that should have gone. Scriptures reveal that David's oldest brother was there in the army that day. The Scriptures reveal that he was so big and so powerful and such a warrior that when Samuel came to Jesse's house to anoint a king, that he looked at David's oldest brother and said, "Surely, this is the king." And God said, "No, you're judging by outward appearances, and I judge by the heart. This man is not him." And so on down through seven older brothers that David had, David being the eighth. I said, "Well, there's one left. He's out tending the sheep." Now, we don't know how old David was exactly when he killed Goliath, but we do know some things about his age. He was not 20 years old or older. Had he been 20 or older, he would have been in the army, drafted. And so David is probably in his late teens. I'm trying to get a point over. You see, do we really want to believe that Nabal has never heard of David, the man that killed Goliath, some approximately 10 years earlier? Do you think that this story has not reverberated throughout all Israel night after night, day after day, month after month, year after year, till everyone is sick of the story? So I want you to understand that when he says this, it is an insult of the greatest magnitude. Moreover, the final proof is what he says after: "Who is the son of David? And who is the son of Jesse?" He even knows who his daddy is. Do you see it? All right, so I want you to see that this is it's a rhetorical question. He doesn't want an answer. And then he says, he's no more than a servant that's broken away from Saul. There's a lot of those running around these days. So I want you to see that in order to justify his refusal, he heaps insults upon David. I might add, verse 30 also proves that he's heard, because in verse 30, Abigail tells us that she knows David is God's anointed who will be the king. And let me tell you, if the little wife knew, you better believe he knew about that too. But the point is, she believed it and he didn't. Moreover, there's no question that Abigail would never have married a churlish, wicked, evil man like Nabal on her own. Here we find, because being a real lover of God, she would have never unequally yoked herself in such a marriage if she'd had a choice. But we see here and know something, unquestionably, we know something about Abigail's father. Another man that sacrificed his daughter to marry a wealthy man that was a godless man. No, Abigail would have never married this man on her own. She loved and feared God, believed the Scriptures, honored and followed the Scriptures. No, there's no question who made this marriage. To an older and to a richer man. Girls, pay attention and learn. I've talked to many young women. I've seen tears come down many a face to many a girl that married a man for his money. And I want to tell you, girls, you'll earn it. That's very brutal. But if you've done it, you can always repent. That's better than justifying it. Verse 11. Shall I then take my bread, my water, my flesh? Look at all these personal pronouns. That I have killed for my Asherahs and give unto men whom I know not from where they are. Because I don't know where you guys are coming from. See, this man has not yet learned at all that all things belong to God and that we're merely the stewards of the things that God has. And that he lets one man use it for a little while and someone else for another while. You die tonight and that house won't be yours tomorrow. Somebody else will live in it. See, if it was yours, it'd go in the casket. Die tonight, the job won't go with you. You know, the one you're so proud of, that title you've got, it won't go. They won't put a business. I bet you they won't even put a business card in there. And even if they did, you'll never get to show it to anybody. Yes, he did know. That's the point. He says, I don't know anything about these guys, but he does. He knows about Goliath. He knows who David is. Verse 12 is an amazing verse. So David's young men turned their way and went again and came and told David all these sayings. Incredible. They actually did exactly what they were told. I used to work in the oil business. I had many people work for me, and very few of them ever did what I told them to do. It's difficult to find someone, especially someone young, to do exactly what they're told, to be a true representative of the person that has sent you. Listen, these are warriors. They know their leader has been greatly insulted, and they have given up all that they have to follow him. You can be sure that some of them's hand nervously tightened around their swords, that they fidgeted with their sling, but they answered not back, though they had been greatly insulted. Nor did they strike back. Gosh, you can't find Christians in churches today with as much wisdom as verse 12 indicates. How about when you're talking to lost people, just tell them what the boss said to tell them. And if they give you an ugly reply, walk away. Oh yeah, I'll see you in hell. How are you going to see them in hell? Unless you're there too, you know. Oh, you know, or take something out and, you know, especially a Bible and beat them over the head with the Scriptures, you know. Thus saith the Lord. Whop, whop. See, now these men did just what they were told. See, listen. God called you to be witnesses. Just tell them what you know and shut up.
Amen.
I mean, listen. What I'm saying is, I really deeply admire these young men. And you young men in this room, you look at this and you learn from it. Because this, for many of us that are older, you know, there's not much hope. Now, that's really not true. Older men that won't learn, can learn, they refuse to. Because God can change hearts and lives at any age. But you young men, especially, be encouraged here by these verses. David sent them on an important mission. And they behaved themselves with incredible prudence. And quite frankly, wisdom beyond their age. I can't believe verse 13. David said to his men, "Gird ye on every man his sword." And they girded on every man his sword. Now that I believe. And David also girded on his sword. They went up after David, about 400 men, and 200 stayed there at the camp with the baggage to protect the children, the wives, the animals, and all their belongings. As you continue reading in chapters after this, you'll see their families were with them. Well, things are looking pretty bad. Can you picture this? Do you see it? Ask the Lord to give you the grace to actually see the story, the hills, the trees, the fields, and the men as these warriors. Listen, 400 men, that's a lot of men, y'all. That's a lot of warriors. Especially when all you've got to deal with is a farmer with a few servants. Look at verse 14. Scene shifts. But one of the young men told Abigail, now this guy was there at Carmel when they were shearing the sheep, and he has lit out back to Maon, back to the ranch, back to where Abigail is with the report of what's happened. But one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, "Behold, David sent messengers out of the wilderness to greet our master, and he railed on them." There's not many words stronger than to rail on. He chewed them out. He ate them up. He spit them out. Insulting. Brutally cruel. But the men were very good. See, the key word is but. Again, the contrast. But the men were very good to us. He's trying to show the wife what a non-sequitur this is. We were not hurt. Neither did we miss anything as long as we went with them when we were in the fields. They were a wall to us both day and night, all the while we were with them keeping the sheep. Now, verse 17 is one of the key verses. Now, therefore, know and consider. Consider. Know the facts. Weigh them out. Consider what you will do. Learn, beloveds. He's a servant. He knows he's a hired hand. He has no authority to do anything except take the problem to a higher authority than he is. And so he comes to Abigail, and see, he's got a hot potato. And instead of carrying the hot potato and worrying about the hot potato and fretting about the hot potato, he just dropped the hot potato in somebody else's lap. And he says, now you decide what you're going to do about it. Consider, what are you going to do? Key word there is thou or you. What will you do? Because evil is determined, watch this, key to understanding everything that's written. For evil is determined against our master and against all his household. For he is such a son of Belial, son of the devil, worthless fellow, wicked, that a man cannot speak to him. Now, let me tell you what he's getting at. Now, at first, some of you may be stunned that a servant would say something like that to a wife about her husband. But understand, he knows the situation is desperate. He is not doing this. See, our motive is always the key for our action. His motive is to save lives. He is actually there. Look at the key thing. He says, for evil is determined against the master. He has come to try and save stupid Nabal's life. He knows Nabal is a walking dead man. The first thing he says is, we've got to save Nabal from himself. He's just issued the death warrant on himself, and he's so stupid he doesn't know it. You see, this man knows warriors. And he knows that you do not say these kind of things and do these kind of things to warriors. He's probably shocked that Nabal is still alive. He's probably stunned that the 10 young men walked away. And quite frankly, so am I. Were it not written in the Holy Writ, I might doubt it. And against all our household. So the man has come to her for the purpose of saving lives. He knows what David is going to do. He knows what warriors are like. Now, this is very important that we understand, beloveds. Nabal has deeply insulted David. And David, it's well known as you read the scriptures and as Abigail is going to rehearse to us shortly, that everyone in Israel knows that David's been anointed by Samuel to be king. Therefore, to insult David insults the God that anointed him. This man has not only insulted these 10 young men, but in insulting them, they've insulted the man that sent them. And in insulting him, they've insulted the one that sent him. So I want you to know that the problem here is that Nabal has scorned David's protection and David's goodness. You say, well, he didn't ask for it. Doesn't matter. He received it anyway. Much like all of us in this room for years scorned God's goodness and God's protection when we didn't ask for it, but we got it anyway. And God comes to us all and says, I make claim, and I have the right to make claim. I have protected you. I have been good to you. And moreover, I have given you life, and I make claim to it. And God has that right. So I'm trying to get you to see that it's David's claim has been put very on very easy terms. Whatever your heart wants to do, whatever comes to your mind, we'll take it. We want to celebrate with you. We're happy for you. And after all, the truth of the matter was, part of the reason he had such a tremendous crop of sheep's hair, of wool, is David and his men protected him. Now, the last part of verse 17, he's such a son of Belial that a man cannot speak to him. His point there is, don't tell me to go appeal to Nabal. We all know he doesn't listen to anybody. I.e., honey, if you don't do something, we're all dead men. That's what he's saying. I would have gone to Nabal, but there's no point talking to him. I.e., don't you remember what I told you in verse 14? He railed on him. Verse 18, then Abigail made haste, took 200 loaves and 2 skins of wine and 5 sheep ready dressed, 5 measures of parched grain, 100 clusters of raisins, 200 cakes of figs, laid them on asses. Look, this guy's got 3,000 sheep. All she did was kill 5. David hadn't asked for much. 5 sheep's not much. It's a penance. Just a nothing. Now, I want you to realize there's 600 men. There's not even a sheep per 100. Even what she's bringing is... the point I'm trying to make you, see, is what she's bringing really isn't going... they're not going to pig out. This is really a very minimal gift for a very great service. So I want you to see that one of the things this lesson is pointing at is ingratitude. Ingratitude. See, the problem is that most of us can hardly believe that a man after God's own heart, that we can find verse 13 written about him. See, listen to me carefully. We would think David would be more gracious. But see, this is a real Bible about real men, not what you and I think men of God ought to be like. That's number one. And number two, again, this is not the same David that you'll find when he's 60 years old and the last 10 years of his life when he's finally gotten a little wisdom. He's got wisdom, but he's got other things too. Flesh. We'll talk about that in a little bit. So look at it. Verse 19. She said to her servants, go on before me. Behold, I come after you. All right, now look. She's got enough food there that's going to take a few animals, not many, but a few, to pack them. So she's going with servants. And they go ahead of her. Now I want you to picture this. Verse 20. And it was so, as she rode on the ass, that she came down by the top of the mountain. And behold, David and his men came down toward her, and she met them. Now have you got that? Do you see this? We're out in the wilderness, y'all. This is rugged terrain. and 400 men that are mad and mean. Listen, they are bent on slaughtering every man they find. When you go into battle, you have to get yourself up for it. You have to start thinking yourself hard for the battle. And here comes a couple of servants and one woman. I mean, this is quite a scene. These men are in their armor. They're protected. They're in their mail. Not like they wore in the knights of King Arthur's day, but they had pieces of metal, overlapping pieces of metal on their as mail in those days. They have their helmets. They've got their swords. And these are foot soldiers. As you read in the stories, there's no horses and donkeys. These guys are walking. When you're trying to hide in the mountains from another army, animals can give you away. And these guys have been walking several miles in April or May. It's hot. They're sweaty. And they're mad. Their leader has been insulted. You understand that? If the Russians insulted Reagan, it would upset us. If Castro insulted Reagan, it would upset us. And we don't know Reagan like these people know David. In fact, many of these men are his relatives, as you could have found out had you read chapter 22. I cheated and read. What a confrontation. Did you see it? David and his men come off one hill down to the valley just as the Lord would have it, as she comes down the other hill. Isn't it amazing? They ran right into each other in all that land out there. Now God reminds us of how mad they are. Verse 21, now David had said. Now God is emphasizing this. He's underlining this because we're to picture this tremendous confrontation of this girl and just how mad David is. I mean, this is the man that slew Goliath. This is the greatest warrior that Israel has ever known. Now, David had said, surely in vain have I kept all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that pertained unto him, and he has requited me evil for good. You know, that's what kills you guys. That's where you lose it in your Christianity. It's where all of us have trouble. We'll just be going along, walking with the Lord, walking in the Spirit, enjoying our Christianity and everything. And then, listen to me, see, the shock of this chapter is, had you read the chapter before, David was magnanimous to Saul, the king. Saul had gone into a cave. And David and his men, quote, just happened to be hiding in the cave. And David could have slain Saul. All Saul's men are outside the cave. His men are encouraging him. It's the day the Lord has made. This is it. God has delivered your enemy right in your hand. Cut that dog down. And David said, no way. This man is the anointed of God. God made him king. Some of you don't understand that God also made your boss. All promotions are from God. All appointments of authority are from God. David understood this. Most of us don't. But here was a king bent on taking David's life, and David is magnanimous. Spares him. Now see, this is where you and I fall into trouble. See, that was a major test. A big test. David could see Saul. He could see the test of Saul. He understood it. He was a threat to the throne in Saul's eyes.